Well, not exactly. This is Bob Marissa filling in for V. Paul, who's still soaking his toes in the Gulf Stream down there in the Florida Keys and enjoying that kind of a weather and things. And here we are getting ready to do the show. I hope you are really paying attention tonight because we have some really good information. We have some nice people here. We have Rob Packey from Down East Trout Limited in Ellsworth, and we have Mike Manning from Project Healing Waters out of Machias. And we're going to be talking about those two things as soon as we get our journal section over. The journal section is brought to us by the Northeast Sporting Journal, the largest outdoor sporting magazine around, serving 50 states and several countries, and it's just a wonderful piece of literature that I think everybody would enjoy. It's sitting on my thing here that I want to make note of, that Bob Lehman was going to be hosting tonight, but I had to make a correction. The lady from Trout Unlimited sent that out and said, Bob Lehman is older and much wiser, but I'm a lot better looking. So you can tell who you can tell the folks that I was here instead of Bob tonight. I have two sections to the journal tonight. The first one is a common sense thing, but in some cases, common sense doesn't seem to be as common as it used to be. We have an unusual situation going on our lakes and ponds and everything, and the ice is very tenuous even now. And so for goodness sakes, be careful. If you don't know your pond, you don't know your body of water, if you don't know the area, be very, very careful. I was at my camp on Craig Pond last weekend, and I had 8 inches of ice right in front of my camp, and so I felt comfortable, and there was a four-wheeler and the snowmobile out, and on another part of the pond, somebody fell through. So you don't know. I suspect it has to do with all the rain we have, and there's a lot more runoff in various places that we don't normally have runoff, and causing weak spots and stuff that people don't normally understand or not normally about, but you got to be very careful. The other thing I want to talk is, for goodness sakes, everybody, if you can get a hand on it, get a copy of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine little newspaper that comes. This time was unbelievable. It's David Trahan deserves a Pulitzer Prize for the work he did on the Lewiston shooting situation. It's spectacular. In it, he pointed out he's very disappointed the fact that our senator, Mr. King, and our representative switched. They were against banning assault type, in quotes, assault weapons, and now they switched and decided that they're for it.
Sounds like our governor might be thinking along those lines too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We could do a whole show on this, but there's some things that I want to point out. First off, he pointed out that historically, the first time the term assault weapon was used was in World War II Germany, when they invented small handheld pistol type things that they could charge and assault various places with. And that term assault weapon has been stolen to use to make semi-automatic guns seem more fierce. They're not made to assault.
No, they're not fully automatics.
No, and they aren't fully automatic either. And I don't normally do this, but I think it's important, and I'm going to read just a little bit here out of this series so that you can get an idea of what he's saying. There are 25 million AR-style semi-automatic weapons. Incidentally, AR stands for Armalite Rifle, mm-hmm. not Assault Rifle or Army Rifle. It was named after the company that first designed these rifles in the 1950s and switched from using wood in the stocks to lightweight airplane-type materials. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And it also said in here that there are 2019, there were 13,922 murders. And of those, over half of them were committed with handguns. Only about 7% were committed with rifles of all types.
And if I read the information correctly, I believe something like 75% of those fatalities were actually gang activity.
That is correct. But also, there were way more murders or people killed who assault by getting beaten to death than there were by the use of rifles, which I thought was a very, very interesting statistic. You're more likely to have somebody knock you over the head with a 2x4 or to beat you up with their fists and kick you to pieces than you are to get killed with a rifle. Ergo, Nancy Pelosi's husband was assaulted with a hammer.
That's right.
So I encourage people to get a copy of this and to read it, because it goes through the chronology, the whole history of this whole situation, and it gives a lot of information that, you know, from priest records and all that kind of stuff, that the papers and stuff is just not coming out. So, I'm going to quote Forrest Gump and say, that's all I've got to say about that today. Now, Rob, are you the president of the Down East Trout Unlimited?
Yes, I am.
Wow. Tell me a little bit. Tell us something. First off, let's start with just what is Trout Unlimited?
And they operate with a core group of professionals in various staffing positions around the country. And then they have in excess of 300,000 volunteers. And in each state, they operate with a state council. This is the volunteer part of the organization. They operate with a state council, whose members are elected by other TU people. And then they have chapters around the state. In Maine, there are 6 chapters. And the Down East chapter basically includes Hancock and Washington counties and southern Penobscot County. And we're the newest chapter, as far as I know, still in the country. Our chapter started was recognized in September, end of September 2019, just in time to get shut down by COVID. So it's been a haul to get this up and going, but we're up and going. And so the mission for Trout Unlimited is to preserve, protect, and restore cold water fish species and their habitat. And we do this by various means. We do advocacy work. We do stream restoration projects, which includes a lot of kinds of work, and we do outreach and education programs from everywhere from youth all the way up through to adults for fly fishing, fly tying, stream ecology, trout biology and salmon biology, things like that, which is kind of leads us to Project Healing Waters as part of the education and outreach work
right.
that we do, which is really important work as well as the restoration and habitat work.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I am still a small little brooks fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
I love fishing in little small brooks.
Me too, actually. That's what I grew up doing.
And you can call me a sinner, but I still prefer a worm and a spinner. Are the worm and spinner people welcome at Trout Unlimited, or is this basically a fly fishing situation?
No, everybody is welcome there. We teach fly fishing, and it was started by fly fishermen. But certainly speaking for myself, I don't oppose anybody that likes to fish. They're all welcome. We do monthly meetings. The chapters vary, but in our chapter area, we do monthly meetings that are open to the public from October through May. We have a brief business meeting, and then we have a speaker. A wide range of speakers join us, and those meetings are free and open to the public. You don't have to be a TU member. You can fish with worms, spinners, or flies, or you don't even have to fish. If the topic appeals to you, you're more than welcome.
That would include lures and everything.
Yes. Yeah. Anybody that wants to come is more than welcome to come to fish, to attend the meetings. Yeah.
Like, it's just interesting. I have a son that does a whitewater rafting guide, and he lives at Big Eddy in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
all summer long. It's a terrible life. Terrible thing to have to put up with. But he's also a fishing guide. But people don't understand. People don't know that Big Eddy is open to general law for a good part of the year. Mm-hmm. It's only fly fishing only certain parts of the year,
yeah. And there are only certain streams in Maine that are fly fishing only. Some are. We obviously promote fly fishing in a big way. That's what we're kind of about. Like I said, I don't oppose anybody fishing. I think it's great to get out there and fish. I fly fish. I started off with worms and spinners, and then as I got to learn how to fly fish better, I've gradually, that's all I do now is fly fish, but I had the experience to be able to cast in different situations. Small streams, I grew up on Mount Desert Island and didn't have the, when I was growing up, obviously couldn't travel very far, so I grew up fishing small streams and beaver ponds, and lost a lot of flies along the way till I learned how to cast well enough to be able to dodge the shrubs.
Yeah, sometimes it's kind of hard to wave a fly rod in some of the places I fish.
It definitely can be, yeah. You learn how to dabble flies on the water by reaching out with your, not actually casting, just sort of flicking the end of the line out with the fly on it and dabbling with it.
That's something that most people don't really spend a whole lot of time doing, is learning how to roll cast.
No, that's another, there are different techniques like roll casting where you actually don't cast the line behind you. And I can say from experience, I was slow to pick up roll casting. It took me a lot of time to be able to get that down well. And I've seen people who can roll cast far better than I can. I'm impressed by that. But there are techniques that you can use with a fly rod to get around the issues of space.
So now, What is your unit out of Ellsworth, correct?
Yeah, we kind of, that's been where we're sort of based out of. It was when we started the chapter, the people who showed up to start the chapter all lived kind of in proximity to Ellsworth, more so than farther down east. So that's how we ended up being based out of Ellsworth.
Okay, we got to take a little break here and allow some of our nice, wonderful sponsors to make some money.
And we'll be right back.
Well, I believe the music is muted out a little bit, and we're back in. Well, I want to jump back to the journal just for a second and try to impress on people how important it is to belong to SAM. And to if you don't have a SAM membership, sometimes SAM does things that we disagree with, and then, but that's with any organization. You get thousands of members, that's going to happen, so you can't hold that. You might not know everything, but we got to belong to it. It's the only lobbying organization we got. It's the only people that are going to really lobby really hard against some of these things that our governor and representatives and stuff are trying to push onto us. Okay, now, how many, can you give me specific, a couple of examples of projects that TU's working, Trout Unlimited is working on right now in the Ellsworth department?
Sure. One of the things that we've worked on over the last couple of years are sea run brook trout surveys. So sea run brook trout are a little subset of brook trout that live in streams that are coastal streams, and if they have access to the ocean, some of those trout will go into the ocean. They're not well understood. There have been some studies on them, but they seem to go to the ocean. They don't go to like salmon do and come back just to spawn. They seem to go back and forth, probably due to temperature issues in the streams that get too warm, and also for increased food that's in the ocean. So a number of years ago, Trout Unlimited in the coastal chapters began doing surveys just to see what streams those were in. And so we participated towards the end of that study. That started before our chapter began. And this past year, we worked last year with Project Share, which is a group that was working on the Narragansett River to do salmon, particularly salmon restoration work, but it will also produce more habitat for trout. And we did what's called large wood installation, where they drop big trees and pin them into place to divert the flow of the water and create a better habitat, cooler water for fish. So we did some work with them. That was heavy work. We had seven of us that went up to do that, and there were two guys for Project Share that were in charge of that. It was an energetic day, to say the least, in the field on 35 mile stream was where we were working. So those are two examples of some things.
Some of the things. Now, if like I belong to Trout Unlimited, I pay my dues. As a matter of fact, I just sent a check in because I like the magazine.
Yes, it's a nice magazine.
I love the magazine. That money that we send into, where does that go?
Some of it, the money that goes to your membership, a small amount of it comes to the chapter, some of it goes to national. New members, I think it's half of the membership comes back to the state and to the chapters, and then some of it goes on to the national organization.
Mm-hmm. So it'll come back to the chapter based on where we live.
Yes. It goes by chapter. So if you're in the Down East chapter, that would come, you'd be coming to us. If you lived in Waterville, it'd be the Kennebec Valley chapter.
Yeah. In Bucksport, I probably go into the Vanguard chapter, Penobscot.
No, it's at the Bucksport, actually, is in our chapter.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So how else do they fund themselves?
Trout Unlimited nationally funds themselves in a major way with major donors. They get grants. But on the state level, we do fundraising events. Chapters do. We do get donations also occasionally. Our chapter is new and small and poor, but we actually have two fundraising raffles going on right now. One is for a limited edition L.L. Bean folding knife, and the other we're just about to get up and going. Will be it's kind of an experiment on our part. It's going to be a half-day trip down east. It's going to be, you'll spend the morning with one of our fly tying instructors tying shad flies, and then after you tie some shad flies, you'll be going with the main guide, who's a member of our chapter, shad fishing with your own flies. So that's a raffle that we are about to start going. So we fund ourselves that way.
Now, do you associate with or affiliate with any of the local run gun clubs?
Not really. We have started to work with the Pleasant River Fish and Game Association. That's been great. We've been dealing with them. It's kind of been a case of feeling our way along. We're still new, and as I said, COVID shut us down for about 2 years. And so we are working with other conservation groups in the area. We're working now with Project Healing Waters out of Machias. And we have talked to some different people in other places, but it's a case of we just haven't had enough time to kind of get up and going on that. Mm-hmm.
I guess there's two organizations right around Bucksport that you might want to look at. One is the Great Pond Mountain Conservation Trust.
Mm-hmm.
They own about 5,000 acres in and around Great Pond Mountain. There's a lot of brooks and streams and
yep.
so on and so. And also the Bucksport Rod and Gun Club is quite active and always open to having people come and speak to them. And
yeah, I should reach out to them because we haven't reached out to the Bucksport Club.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called the Bucks Mills Rod and Gun Club. So I know there's a number of waters there like that people do. It's interesting because I was working with a group while that was trying to conserve the upper reaches of the West Branch of the Union River because mm-hmm. there's nothing there.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a person from the Atlantic Salmon Commission there, and we showed some photos, and he said, "This is a sick river." And my reaction, what do you mean? It's a sick river. It's beautiful. Well, there are no trees in it. When they're running logs down through, they blew up all of the
yep.
rocks, and it's just a straight run. There's no eddies. There are eddies, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised to think that they needed to have people just to put wood into the river. You talk about that a little bit.
Well, I'm not an expert on it, to say the least, but I've just participated in it. But you're right. A lot of the rivers in Maine were straightened and obstacles were blown out or dug out during the log drive days. And that isn't good for fish habitat. So now that's some of the restoration work that's being done. And that was what the large wood installation work that we did on the Narragansett River was about, was to start making contours and also to provide areas for of better depth, and which also helps temperature of the river, that will help promote brook trout and salmon. They both need cold waters for that. The Trout Unlimited has recently done on the national level, has come about with a new way so they can focus priorities. They're not going to eliminate other projects or other waters, but they asked the chapters to come up with priority waters in their chapter areas. So this is brand new. So for the Down East chapter, the two rivers that were selected were the Narragansett River and the Union River. Mm-hmm. And the Union River was selected in part because of the really nice habitat on the West Branch and the potential for restoring that for brook trout up there is pretty good. So those are the two rivers in our area that we'll be looking at.
See, one of the things that had my shorts in a bunch about Trout Unlimited is 20, 25 years ago, they said they get the Union River, the West, and the Middle Branch stocked with brown trout.
Oh, I remember fishing for them when I was in high school.
Well, that was a great brook trout thing, and brown trout were more aggressive than the brook trout.
Exactly.
But You don't catch any brown trout there anymore.
No, I tried that probably about 15 years ago. I hadn't been in there for a long time. And when I was in high school, a friend of mine took me to help me learn how to fly fish up there. And I did not see any or catch any brown trout.
No, I was talking with a fellow. There's a great canoe trip. You can go up to Dow Pines up and come down through the West Branch to Tannery Loop.
Yes,
it's a good day trip. You got to kind of pay attention because there's some places there that can get quite exciting quickly. But we was coming down there one day, and there's a couple of fellas fishing there, and they said, "Have you caught?" And he said, "No, we've only caught 3 or 4 brook trout." And I said, "Well, good. To me, that's pretty good." But they were fishing for brown trout. They wanted to catch some brown trout.
Yeah, that Tannery Loop section was one of the sections that used to have brown trout.
Yeah,
and I have tried fish. That's such a beautiful section of water. I've fished that recently, and I really haven't done anything there.
Well, you're not the only one that fishes there.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
No, when I was a kid, the Orland River in Bucksport, don't anybody from Orland call, the Orland River in Orland, had sea-run brown trout.
Oh, I was not aware of that.
They did. I was there when a fellow caught 2 of them one evening,
mm-hmm.
and one of them weighed about 3 pounds.
Yeah, some of the fish that go into the ocean, the sea-run trout, do get bigger. Interestingly, in Maine, most of the brook trout that are sea-run trout remain small. They are chunkier and heavier than the trout that stay in the streams, and they may be a bit bigger, but you don't really see brook trout like 3 or 4 or 5 pounds coming back into the streams. You may get an 11-inch fish in a stream that usually has a 6-inch fish.
But yeah, there's a big pool there right below the dam and from Alamosic Lake, and he caught him on a goldfish, bang bang, one right after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the old people back around our neighborhood and everything called those Scotch sea trout.
Oh, well, some of the brown trout, when they were first brought over to this country back in the 1800s, did come from Scotland, and I think some came from Germany, as I recall, so that could be...
But that's what they called them.
I wonder if that's where the name came from.
No, the brook trout were called salters.
Oh, yeah, they're still called salters. I refer to them as sea-run trout, but they're called salters also. Yeah.
So, but that's interesting. Now, Mike, you've been sitting there for half an hour, and we're going to take another little break here, and when you come back, we're going to talk to you a little bit.
Okay,
folks, welcome back. I hope you get your coffee cup filled and all ready for our second section here. We have Mike Manning, who's going to tell us about Project Woods and Waters. And I just found out that Mike is a fisheries biologist.
Yeah, I tried to keep it quiet so I wouldn't get in trouble.
Oh, that's not a problem. I know some of the fisheries bios. I know Greg Burr well. Matter of fact, he hosts this show periodically when Paul's away. And I understand he's retiring right off.
I'm not familiar. I've only been here not quite 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So I'm still learning.
Yeah, he's down to Whitneyville.
Okay.
Yep. Been hearing rumors about him retiring for a little while now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike is a fisheries biologist with Downey Salmon Federation, not with the state, although they work with the state.
Obviously. I got you.
Yep.
Downey Salmon Federation.
Yeah, and that's actually how the Project Healing Waters program here got started.
Mm-hmm.
When I applied for the job, they were looking at my resume and saw that and started asking me questions, and then said that they had been approached about trying to help get a program started. And at the end of the interview, I commented, whether you hire me or not, it's a good program. It's worth getting involved in. So they gave me the job and told me the first thing I had to do was get the program started.
Yeah. So explain just what Project Healing Waters might be.
Project Healing Waters is a program for disabled vets that you have to have a VA disability rating, even if it's 0%. And it started out at Walter Reed at just as part of active duty rehab. They found that it helped a lot of the troops, especially ones dealing with trauma. It gives them that little bit of focus to kind of calm everything down. And that started in 2005. And I believe in 2008, it started expanding out and they started bringing in veterans. And we do, we teach fly tying, fly casting. We're just getting ready to start building fly rods. I just ordered stuff, put in the order for materials today. Go fishing, take them fishing. And also a little bit of education related to fly fishing. And it doesn't cost the veterans a penny. They don't pay for a thing, even when we send them on national trips. out to like Montana and Michigan, the vets don't pay a thing, pay a penny.
Wow, that's quite interesting. Is that any, do you have any association or any contact with the people that do the cabin in the woods?
I've talked to them. So the program, we just finished our 1 year anniversary, and I tried to keep things small and in control for the first year, since I went from just being a participant to trying to start and run a program. One of my goals this year is to start trying to interact more with some of the other veterans organizations, because there are so many in Maine and there are so many vets that I feel like if, you know, we start to hook up and work together, there's even more that we can do.
Yeah, I know it's like around Bucksport, you know, our veterans organizations seem to be falling by the wayside. And something like that, this could help perk them up again.
Yeah. I'm hoping that, and actually when Rob and Tammy mentioned this, I was like, oh yeah, this fits in, because one of the things I really want to start doing is getting the word out about the program. Last year, we grew mainly by word of mouth. Now I want to start really publicly advertising, because I feel like we're in a position to where we can start handling more growth.
Right. Now your organization is located in Machias?
But we actually meet at the Down East Salmon Federation Hatchery in East Machias, mm-hmm. Second Thursday of every month. I had to stop and think about that one for a minute, because it's next week, from 6 to 8 there at the hatchery.
And what is this way you teach fly tying or whatever? Or what is the meeting composed of?
The meeting generally will start off, I'll try to update them on whatever news, you know, or things we've got from national. And then Mike Elkovich is from TU, is our tying instructor, and we'll go through tying. And it's really fascinating to watch the vets. It's not like we sit around and talk about things that we did or saw in the military, but I watch a Vietnam vet and an Iraq, Afghanistan vet sit there and they just start bonding. And actually I've threatened to separate them, because they start cutting up and causing all kinds of trouble. But in all honesty, it just makes me smile to see it, especially the, one Iraq, Afghanistan vet. The man hadn't left his house, excuse me, in several years. Finally came to this meeting, and at the end of the meeting, his first meeting, at the end of the meeting, he walked up and asked if he could come back. A few meetings later, his wife came to the meeting with him just to thank us, to see. It's done so much to help him. To the point that the guy had a medical procedure and was still in recovery and was trying to convince her to drive him to the meeting. And she called me and I said, no, if he comes here, I'm going to smack him in the head. So
now, do you folks run the organization, or do the veterans run the organization?
I am a vet also. Mm-hmm. It's run by the vets, but the way Project Healing Waters is set up, there are local programs, and I'm the program lead. But to start a program, they started off with, and we still do, try to partner with TU to get the knowledge, the local knowledge, the knowledge for fly tying, for casting. I mean, if not for Rob, I wouldn't have the incredible instructors that I have. So it's a joint, very much a joint effort.
Yeah, so it's almost a subset of TU. Almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
We don't get our funding, all comes through, well, national and fundraising. The Healing Waters headquarters funds each program based on the number of veterans, and then the local programs will start fundraising to get beyond the stuff. The funding we get from national covers those five core things I mentioned: the tying, casting, rod building, fishing, and education.
Are you familiar with the local organization here in Brewer, Penobscot Fly Fishers?
Yeah,
they were originally part of TU years ago, and for some reason had to do with dams on the river. They broke away and they started up Penobscot Fly Fishers, but it's a good organization, and they've got fly tires, they've got rod builders, you know, it may be a resource for you.
Yeah, I think, aren't they the ones who put on the cabin fever reliever?
Correct.
Yeah.
Coming up real soon here.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great organization. This is Rob again. And the cabin fever reliever is the last weekend in February, the 24th, 25th. And we'll actually, Down East TU and Project Healing Waters, we'll have a table there. Mike and I were there last year with some other members of our group, and we'll be there again this year to talk about both of our groups. That's a great organization, and it's a great it's a real fun time at the Cabin Fever Reliever. It comes just in the nick of time. It's aptly named.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah, the two organizations I mentioned, the Conservation Trust and the Rod and Gun Club, we each have a table there.
Yeah, actually, I remember the conservation group that I must have missed on the
Bucks Mills Rod and Gun.
Yeah, I must have missed that. But last year was the first year that we went, and so I'll look them up when I'm up there that weekend.
Yeah, it'd be good. You can make a contact there. You might be able to do some things.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Back to the Project Healing Waters. How do you take a disabled fish service member out fishing?
It can be challenging, and I was a medic, so my job's to worry about everybody. It's still hardwired. I can't stop no matter how much I try. The majority of our vets right now in the program are Vietnam vets, so I do worry about that. We try to pair each vet that's in the water with a volunteer. Just because of concerns like that. We have stuff available to us. Like I can get equipment from National to help vets tie that may only have one hand, things like that. Haven't had to yet. There are some events that are set up specifically even for vets in wheelchairs or, you know, amputees. So there are ways to keep everybody involved, and that's for me is a big goal. As these guys age, we were talking earlier, and you commented aging out of stuff. Trying to keep them involved in some way as much as I can. I don't have exact numbers, but we just had a regional Healing Waters meeting last week, and they were talking about the number of veterans that have gone through the program since it began is over 75,000, and very few, if any, of those that went through the program have completed suicide. And we lose 22 vets a day to suicide. So to me, that alone makes this program invaluable.
Yeah, well, I would think so. Now, are there places for handicapped people to fish? Specifically,
I haven't had to look for that yet. I have a feeling I'm going to be relying on Rob if and when that does come up. DSF lets us use some of their facilities. We used wigwams last year. Down East Salmon Federation. Sorry. Yeah. And that area was, there's a spot that's shallow enough and smooth enough. There's a little cove where you can walk out and start casting out into the stream more, where it's a little easier for them to move around if they have mobility issues.
See, I understand your situation. I graduated from high school in 1964. So I'm in the category. We got to take another little time out. Again, our number is 1-800-966-1039. If you have any questions or would like to make a phone call, we'd be glad to hear from you.
And this is the break for the General Appliance and Brewer, now currently owned by Gary Coleman. And if anybody out there has any need for gas appliances, servicing too, they are an excellent resource. Gary used to work for Al Elkins, and when Al chose to retire last year, Gary picked up the business, and I've been checking out his reviews online, and people are really impressed. So if you're in the market for Servel or any other gas appliance, whether it be refrigerator, stove, and also for the composting toilets, which I have to say, ride the wave, baby.
Ride the wave.
Because I know that that Jim's out there listening. And anyways, but they're an excellent place, well worth checking out if you have any need for any kind of services would involve, especially involving gas. Excellent customer service.
Yep, they bailed me out a couple of times. So be sure to stop in and see them over there on Center Street in Brewer. How does one get in contact? How does one, now, is this a program that somebody enters, goes through, and leaves? Or is this like a Rod and Gun Club or TU, where it's a type of organization, a club type thing?
They can if they want. I can tell you, me personally, as long as I'm running the Machias program, I'm not going to ask anybody to leave. They can stay as long as they want. And I do also, we're not the only program in Maine. There's also a program at Toga, in Togas, and in Bangor. Mm-hmm. We just happen to be the newest one.
No, my point was, is this like a fish and game club where you come and you're a member and you stay or is this a program where you have certain goals to meet and you go through and you complete the program?
We do have certain goals as far as teaching, but there's never really an official completion. Mm-hmm. The fly tying, Mike started us off with very basic patterns and we're building up to more complex patterns, but there's never all right, you've completed this. Here's a piece of paper saying you've done it. Go away.
Yeah.
I'll never ask anyone to leave. And I don't believe that's a Healing Waters policy. Yeah, it's not that I've ever heard.
Okay. It's not a course that you take and complete.
Correct.
It's a lifelong learning experience.
Correct.
Now, how does one become a member? How does one get in contact with you folks?
The easiest way would be to go to the Project Healing Waters website. It's www.projecthealingwaters.org, and there'll be a link. They just redid the website, so I can't give you exact directions on the page, but if you look, there should be a link that talks about how to get involved. You click on that, and then you can drill down to state through state and down to local areas to find a program that's close to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then submit your information. That'll go to the program lead, and they'll reach out.
So if you contact them, they'll come back and contact you.
That's how it's supposed to work.
Or vice versa.
Yep.
So now, how far away do you have folks coming to be part of your program? I mean, Washington County is a pretty good sized area.
Oh yeah, it is. I'm learning that.
And it's not highly populated.
No. We have people coming from Ellsworth.
Uh-huh.
And I've actually been approached about trying to get something set up in Ellsworth. I just don't have the resources yet.
Right.
That's kind of a long-term or a longer range goal, is to get something set up in Ellsworth, because there's a big population there that's not being serviced. I also had somebody just mention about, talk to me today about going to the Maine Veterans Home. Even though they may not be able to go out fishing very easily, we could still go in and do the fly tying and things like that with them. So I'll be speaking to them at some point, I think.
In the Veterans Home in Bangor?
This one would be in Machias.
In Machias, oh, okay. But in the Veterans Home in Bangor, there's a Tom Hennessy painting of the cable pool on the Narragansett River.
Okay.
I know that because when my father was in the veterans home, I saw it and my father fished in that pool.
Oh, wow.
My dad was a World War II veteran. He was a 2nd Marine Division from Taro and Saipan, and he was a big-time salmon fisherman. Mm-hmm. And the first time I touched a fly rod was at Stillwater Pool on the Narragansett River. It's got a dam across it now.
Oh, that's a shame. You know, it's interesting talking about it, the connection to fathers and fishing. Yeah. It just made me start thinking about mine, who passed away in 99. Actually, I'm older than he was now. So,
but there was an old gentleman named Hal Wasson that took me down to the river and told me to cast and keep my elbow in and all that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, he whap, bat me back the head. He said, "Don't let that line touch the ground. Don't let that line touch the ground." Because at that time, they didn't have the floating line technology we have. They were all greased lines. Mm-hmm. And when it hit the ground, boy, it picked up sand and dust and all that kind of a stuff. So I could, it was just like watching on TV, NCIS there, when Gibbs whaps him back of the head. It was the same thing. He whapped me back of the head and said, "Don't let that line touch the ground, son." Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah,
but, yep.
I never got to fly fish with my father, but, you know, when I was a kid in Vermont, he took me to the little streams and hook and worm, just like we were talking about before the show. So, but the first fish I ever did catch with a fly rod, it was after he passed away and I was given his fly rod. So,
no, that was my first fly fishing experience. Later on, when I got hooked on fly fishing, it was the remote trout ponds up country, where you could go and, you know, you get right on the coast the evening, it looked like it's raining, there's so many fish rising.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, all these books you read about fly fishing and stuff, they're talking about matching the hatch and all that kind of stuff. So you know, that pond, when it was like that, you throw a cigarette butt out there and you're going to catch a fish. I mean, they were just, you know, it was really, really interesting. And there are places on, like, there are places on the Union River, the West Branch, that people could get to, and they could fish right alongside from the bank, right there, Tannery Loop.
Okay.
they could fly fish right from the bank. But there's a lot of places where the water's shallow enough that you could fish from the bank. You'd have to have somebody take it, because you have to be careful, because, you know, you can be fishing along and all of a sudden you float your hat. But when we were young and first started fishing out there in the 60s and stuff, you had to be really careful, because as you're wading along, there were still places in the river that hadn't filled yet, but when they blew log jams.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd be wading along fishing, all of a sudden, bloop, down you go. Because there'd be a big hole in the river.
Yeah, and that's a big surprise when that happens. When you step into something deep and all of a sudden you're in the water swimming.
It wasn't a problem for us then, because we weren't too poor to have waders and everything. We just had a pair of jeans and sneakers on. So, you know, you just dried out eventually. But that West Branch, it was notorious for blast holes, I guess you'd call them, in the river. Mm-hmm. But they've over the last 40 years, they've all washed in and filled in, and you don't run into that anymore. So, but now do you take any of your people to Grand Lake Stream?
We did. That was our second outing last year. We went up to Grand Lake Stream, and one of our vets, it was great. I didn't fish much because I'm too busy running around worrying about everybody else, but he was on the opposite side of the stream with a guide. And they were stocking a fish, and I just sat back and watched. And he pulled out after about 30 minutes, he pulled out a beautiful landlocked salmon, and I could see him grinning from across the stream. It was great. But yeah, we had another trip planned up there, but this was in right before everything shut down, and the flows were just too high.
Yeah.
I mean, the flows were getting up 700-800, and I'm not taking... I don't even want to wade in that. So.
Yeah, Grand Lake Stream is about a 300 is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that there is a fair amount of water there that's shallow enough.
Yeah.
So that you can wade it safely, even at my advanced state of maturity.
You're just well experienced.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when you wade out there and you get above the knees, and all of a sudden you're headed downstream, and you can't stop yourself.
Uh-huh.
It becomes a problem. And I'm sure folks that have, you know, other physical limitations, it could really be a
Actually, struggle. Talking about that and you know, mobility with some of the vets, one of the things this year that I'm hoping to raise funds for, they're actually fly vests that are personal flotation devices.
Yep.
Just to have those available for the people that want them, because of things like that.
I had a friend who, he was disabled and excellent fly tyer, but he would go fishing Grand Lake Stream at the dam pool.
Mm-hmm.
When the water was just right, his son would take him down the bank in his wheelchair, manual wheelchair, and cross the that low stretch of a stream and get him to the island to fish.
Yeah, there's a sandbar right there, too.
Yeah, he would cross to the sandbars, what he would do. Yeah, it was pretty neat.
I don't know how he did that without getting his wheels stuck. That's pretty good.
Strong son.
Yeah. They make some wheelchairs now with big fat tires on them, don't they?
They do. I haven't seen any personally, but I've seen photos of some of those.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Well, I think what you guys are both doing is quite impressive. Really, when you get to the cabin fever reliever, look up those two organizations, I got a brain cramp here. The Great Quan Conservation Group. Don't get caught up with the conservation part.
Right.
Some people get a negative attitude towards things like that, but they're open to all. They're open to hunting, fishing, trapping, everything. That's one of the beauties for the Land for Maine.
Trust,
they took some of that money to buy some of their land, and so they have to keep it open. I understand people have told me there might be some trout waters on their land.
Mm.
Not to speak of.
Don't give away the secret fishing hole.
No, it always tickles me. You read columns and stuff in various magazines saying, you know, they're catching fish here and they're catching fish there and everything. And I know you don't bother to go because they're done. But I want to thank you guys for coming in. We certainly did enjoy it. And I hope that somebody out there gets some information. Once you want more time, give information to get a hold of the Healing Waters people.
It's www.projecthealingwaters.org.
And you're in Machias.
And yeah, we meet in Machias. There's also programs in Bangor and Tagus.
And how about TU in Ellsworth?
You can just Google on TU and you come up with the website if you want to join through that way. And we meet, the third Wednesday of every month. We'll be meeting through May in Ellsworth at the Morse Center.
Well, thank you. And we'll see you next week on Maine Outdoors.